Barry Bonds just came and sat down with my good friend Marty Lurie and Barry Bloom of MLB, senior writer at MLB.com. I know Marty's exhausted from the volume of the plaza. Barry, what'd you think of Bonds coming sitting down here? What a fascinating dude.
Yeah, I think he was great. And, you know, this is kind of the new Bonds. You know, a lot of the things we talked thousands and thousands of hours off the record over the years. And one of the things he used to say was that he used his anger to fuel himself to play. And now that he doesn't need to do that anymore, he doesn't. And the sweet side of him is always out. And that's the way he looked out there when he did the acceptance for the plaque today. That's the way he was here. That's the way he was in the dugout talking to us after the ceremony. I mean, it's just pretty typical of Barry.
Where does it go from here for him?
I think that, you know, when we were joking about the book, I think the book is an important step for him because everybody else has always formed his story. He's never really sat down and formed his own story. And I think for him to get over the hump to get in the National Baseball Hall of Fame, he's got to tell his story. Because it's a redemptive country. People love comeback stories. People love people who either say they're sorry or give a mea culpa and find out really what this guy was really all about.
Yeah.
And he's got 5 years. He's at about 53%. I think he can make it up in 5 years, and I think the book makes a big effort for him.
All right, Barry Bloom with us, MLB.com. All-Star Game is coming up, and Rich Walsh was with us earlier, and Rich is going to MC the town hall with Rob Manfred on Monday,
okay.
Which is always interesting. Bob Selig always made it interesting. You know, we've been talking, and George Contos will join us tomorrow to talk about this. Is baseball cool enough? Is Rob Manfred too cool for baseball?
No. I mean, Rob is a lawyer and a businessman. You know, he was behind all the labor agreements that were solved, you know, when Bud was the commissioner. He's really very adept at what he does. Does he have the love for the sport that Bud did? I don't know that anybody, and Bud's going into the Hall of Fame in like a week. I'm talking about, yes, you, definitely you. And the, but Bud, he was just really a fan first, and then everything else came from it. And I think Rob is a businessman and very pragmatic. And I think that, you know, it's a tough sport to really get anything changed in the past. It's like, you know, it's glacial.
Yeah.
And Bud did more of it than anybody in his tenure.
Well, I know I'm throwing red meat to Giants fans listening to Weekends in the Park right now, but the absurdity that Bud Selig is going to go into the Hall of Fame in a week and that Barry Bonds that we're having to debate him going in is so absurd because Bud Selig got fat off the whole steroid era. So to me, there are no murky shadows here, no pun intended. I mean, it's very hypocritical.
Well, there's two things. When La Russa, Cox, and Torrey got in, they all got in having with teams that had players that allegedly did steroids. I mean, a lot of them are mentioned in the Mitchell report.
Right.
So once you break that barrier and the guys who got in, managers who had those teams get in, it's inevitable that all the guys get in. And you can argue the merits of, you know, what happened with Selig and what he knew, when he didn't know it. You know, it's like, it's endless. But I think all of those things breaking down are going to eventually have all these guys getting in. And we already have them. We have Piazza. We have Bagwell this year. There are, you know, Rodriguez. There are people getting in now who there are suspicions, if not, you know, tangible evidence.
Barry Bloom joins us here. And I know we're going to get back to the All-Star game and what it means now that there are no longer World Series home field advantage consequences, et cetera. But there are studies that have been concluded now that the ball is different, that the grooves or the seams on the ball are higher from the rawhide than they have been in the past. And I wonder your thoughts on some of these complaints and how it's affecting baseball. Namely, Marcus Stroman of the Blue Jays was talking about it. He implied that it's having a result in more blisters with the pitchers. We see the ball going further, et cetera. What are your thoughts on where the baseball is at nowadays?
Every time there's a big uptick in home runs, you hear the same thing. And, you know, it either comes from one of three places. It's the lack of pitching. And I think there's a dearth of solid pitching throughout baseball. There's, you know, the ball, which is constantly argued about, and Major League Baseball has just tried to debunk that by doing a study of it. And number three is the ingestion of performance-enhancing drugs, and it's a very tough situation, even though Major League Baseball has a great drug prevention program, and these guys get tested all the time. There are doctors out there who stay ahead of the curve, and guys go to those doctors. They get blocked, you know, they get blocks. They get stuff that's not even on the list that it isn't tested for. So all of those things combined, whenever you see the home runs start to uptick, it's a combination of those three things.
No doubt.
In 1919, baseball realized that the fans wanted instant gratification, that they wanted to sit at a game and didn't want to watch four singles to score a run, but wanted to wait for that moment for the ball to go over the fence. They created the greatest home run hitter at that time ever, which was Babe Ruth, an icon, and the fans loved it. They ate it up. They changed the ball in 1919 and 1920 as well. It's almost 100 years. We've gone through cycles of games where there have been less runs, where you haven't had the home runs, and miraculously, somehow or other, all of a sudden, they started hitting home runs again. This is a business. They understand the business. The owners understand the business. The fans want to sit there, and even if their team loses, they want to go home and say, I just saw Brandon Belt hit a ball into McCovey Cove. Home runs are the lifeblood of baseball. Baseball's always thought that, and you'll never convince me in a million years that they don't doctor the baseball, because they're businessmen, and baseball and home runs go together.
Well, to your point, we just visited with a guy who played for giant teams that really, except for 2002, didn't win. But they packed the ballpark to see him hit. And as they set out in the one of the guys set out there, you know, nobody went to get a hot dog when Barry Bonds came to the plate, and now you're seeing it relived with Judge, you know, where he's already got 30 home runs and he's a magnificent player who's hitting the ball a ton. And even the kid down here, Stanton, who's been doing it when he stays healthy year in and year out. And sure, I agree with you. There's a competing factor here, though. They want to quicken the pace of the game, and you have to have better pitching and better defense to do that. But you want more offense because it's more compelling to the fans, and there's no way that the two are complementary to each other.
They built smaller ballparks. All of a sudden in 1987, out of the blue, Wally Joyner hit 35 home runs. People hitting the ball all over. Out of the blue. Well, it just happened out of the blue. Things like that don't happen.
Brady Anderson.
It doesn't happen. Brady Anderson, 96.
Yeah, Luis Gonzalez.
Then you have that whole era that you talked about. The elephant in the room that everybody was doing, and it was an era. And for Bonds, he was great before, and he was great after. And that's someone said that today, and I think that was a very, very telling statement for us. But you go back to the war years when they didn't have the rubber to make the baseball, and they couldn't, you know, have the equipment to have it. You go into the 60s when all of a sudden you had the bigger ballparks, the football stadium, the dual-purpose parks. They cut down on the home runs. People didn't like that. So now they went back to building parks like they had in 1909 and 1912, where you built it on your corner. So I love it. I'm not saying it's bad, but I think it's naive for anybody to think that the people who run this game and make the billions don't understand that you can't have five games during the week, 1-0 or 2-1. People aren't going to, they're not going to come out and watch soccer. They're not going to come out and watch, well, you like hockey. But even hockey, they probably changed the puck. It's 7-5 in hockey games now. I mean, that's different, too. So that's just my take on it.
Well, getting back to the guy of the day, Barry told me two things, which shows me how incredible a player he is beyond all this. He said that, A, he would know whether it was a ball or a strike before it came out of the pitcher's hand.
Yeah.
And B, he got three pitches to hit in the game, maybe, and he still got his home runs.
Yeah.
That's how good he was. And it doesn't matter what you might ingest to help you drive it a little bit further, you still have to hit the ball.
No one's debating that. That's why I won all the MVPs. And in my lifetime, I mean, I don't remember seeing Ted Williams hit like I saw Bonds hit. Or I did see Carew hit, but, you know, he wasn't the power hitter this guy was. I didn't see enough of Hank Aaron or Willie Mays or Frank Robinson, but I saw this guy.
Yeah.
And for my money at that point, it's just what you said. He had the shortest stroke from the part where the bat was until through the zone. He could wait forever for the ball to get through. And that's who he was, 1930. And the Depression was coming, and baseball was dying for patrons. They needed people to get involved with the game. The stock market had crashed, and now it's 1930. They changed the ball. The whole league hit 300. You know, Lefty Odul hit 394 whatever that year. And, you know, that 19, they told you, we're changing the ball. Then they created the All-Star Game. They created the Hall of Fame. They created promotions like Ladies Day to get people into the park. This is a major business, and they're very smart.
And those seams are higher, so it is interesting. The ball's flying 20 feet further.
Come on. I mean, really. You know, if I had a criminal case and I had to argue this, the jurors would be looking at me going, you want us to believe that? Really. They'd be looking at me saying, well, you know, nice theory you have. If I was trying to defend that the ball's not different.
No, come on.
And the prosecution would be putting stuff on, just what I was just talking about, and the jurors would say, gee, that seems odd. What circumstantial evidence? It seems like home runs go up just when they need more things to happen in the game. After Ripken, after, you know, the strike.
Yeah.
You know, Maguire Sosa saved the game.
Right. Well, I think Ripken saved the game.
Well, he did, but believe
and then,
me.
And then you go to Maguire and Sosa.
Yeah.
And the fact that, you know, you found Andro in Maguire's locker, and they didn't do anything about it.
No, and well, at any rate, today was a big day for Barry Bonds, and just wetting the beak for what's to come with Barry. If you were to nail down his number one virtue, baseball virtue, would you put it at his eye, his intellect? What would you put his number one virtue at?
Well, one of the things he just said, and I know this is a fact, is that Barry is not a reader. He's not a it's not that he can't read, but if you show him something on a page, it blurs his mind. But if you show him how to do something, he can do it in a second. And I think his memory and his ability to pick out how to hit. Just talking to Donnie Mattingly about this, and Barry was the hitting coach there last year. You know, he said that he would pick up things in hitters and pitchers just sitting on the bench. He'd call pitches. He'd do all kinds of things. He said, I've never seen anything like it. So, I mean, I think his baseball IQ is so high that it's outer-worldly. And, you know, I'm lucky enough. I mean, I'm not taking anything away from Willie because, like you, Marty, I didn't see Willie that much. But I grew up with Mantle. I covered Tony Gwynn's whole career and Barry's whole career. Those are the three best hitters I've ever seen.
Yeah. No, I'm with you, and it's Ted Williams for me. He's like enough.
But I didn't see him at all.
I did, but I read enough about him.
Right.
And, you know, the whole thing, this thing was, you know, the pitch is, the rookie throws the pitch, and they call it a ball. And the umpire says, don't worry, Mr. Williams will tell you when it's a strike.
Right.
And
well,
that's
that's what
Bonds was as well.
And the thing was that, you know, Tony idolized Williams, and Williams cataloged everything about pitchers in his own mind, while Tony was able to go to the videotape.
All right. Hey, great to have you with us. Maybe
Thank
tomorrow,
you.
If something happens tonight, we'll be out here tomorrow.
Okay.
I love talking ball with you.
Barry Bloom's the man.
MLB.com.
What's the hours tomorrow?
Tomorrow we're 9 to noon, and we'll be out here about 10 to 12 tomorrow. So stop by.
Are you shooting off to Miami for the All-Star game and all that jazz?
Not this year.
Okay.
This year I'm off that duty.
Okay. Well, I've entered a contest for Hawaiian Airlines, Josh.
Yep.
Because we're going to send you can enter. He's eligible.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we're going to send a couple to Hawaii via Hawaiian Airlines, Kona, Kauai, or Oahu, and we pick the winner out 11:45 tomorrow, and it's a great, the odds are tremendous. It's the best odds you'll ever have.
I'm going to put in a card before I leave. There's no doubt about
that. Yeah, please do that.
I will.
All right, nice to see
Thanks
you.
For having me on.
Thanks, Barry.
That is
always fun.
Yeah, very good. No,
it's a great day today.
All right. Boy, what a day, Pat, huh?